Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
There is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge. We now need stability and unity. I pledge that I will serve you with integrity and humility.
The most important objective for our country right now is stability. Governments cannot eliminate volatility in markets.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Welcome to the show today. We're bringing you Prime Minister's Questions, Rishi Sunak and the Labour leader Keir Starmer. And Ewan, Westminster has a new party leader today.
Yes, and for once, it is not the Conservatives. Aberdeen South MP Stephen Flynn is going to be asking two questions of the Prime Minister. He is the SNP's new Westminster leader, taking over from Ian Blackford following his resignation. Now, he's 34 years old. And he beat Alison Thewlis to the top SNP Westminster job. Thewlis, apparently, closer to Sturgeon. He was only elected to Parliament in 2019. And he's already said that he's going to appoint Mari Black as his deputy. You remember, Stephen, Mari Black was the baby of the House. She was just 21 years old when she was elected. And she's still only 28. So a real changing of the guard for the SNP at Westminster.
Yeah, absolutely. And really interesting to see how Stephen Flynn performs at his first Prime Minister's Questions as the SNP's leader in Westminster. Ian Blackford, of course, known for his very colourful contributions to parliamentary debates over the years. I'm sure there'll be many parliamentary fans who'll miss his contributions. It'll be interesting to see how Stephen Flynn gets on. Of course, lots of focus today on Rishi Sunak and his grip on power. There have been two U-turns in 2 days because of rebellions by backbench Tory MPs. On Monday, we had a turnaround over house building targets. MPs didn't want those imposed on local authorities that they had to build a certain amount of houses as the Tories tried to reach their goal of building 300,000 homes in a year. That was the first one, led by Theresa Villiers and Bob Seeley, who spoke to this programme as well. And then there's the change in position on onshore wind farms. That was something that there had been a ban in place effectively for many years against the building of wind power turbines on land. And essentially that has now been overturned, also due to objections by backbench Tory MPs.
Yeah, two big U-turns surely like to come up in PMQs today. We try not to play bingo before PMQs because this is going to rather date the podcast, isn't it? But my prediction is that the opposition leader will trot out his favourite word, which is weak. He will accuse the Prime Minister of being weak. He's been saying this almost every week for quite some time now. And I think these U-turns are really going to play into his favour. He's standing up now. Here's Keir Starmer.
By welcoming the new Member of Parliament for the city of Chester to have place in this now. It's the best result for Labour in the 105 years we've been fighting that seat, and I look forward to working with her to build a better future for the people of Chester. Mr Speaker, the Conservative Party promised the country it would build 300,000 houses a year. This week, without asking a single voter, the Prime Minister broke that promise by scrapping mandatory targets. What changed?
Mr. Speaker, let me start by also welcoming the Honourable Lady to her place. Now, the Honourable Gentleman comes here every week, and I know he's focused on the process and the politics, but I don't think he's actually taken the time to read the detail of what we are doing to improve our planning system. So let me just explain what we are doing. We are, Mr. Speaker, we are protecting the Greenbelt. We are investing millions to develop brownfield sites. We're providing support and protection for local neighbourhood plans. Yeah. Just this morning, the Shadow Housing Secretary said, communities should have control over where homes are built and what sort of homes are built. That's my position, that's her position. What's his position?
Mr. Speaker, does he really expect us to believe that the member for Chipping Barton and the member for the Isle of Wight are cheering him on because he's going to build more homes? Pull the other one. I'll tell him what changed. His backbenchers threatened him. And as always, the blancmange Prime Minister wobbled. He did a grubby deal with a handful of his MPs and sold out the aspirations of those who want to own their own home. Was it worth it?
Mr. Speaker, as ever, engaging in the petty personality politics, not focused on the substance. Again, let me explain what we're doing. We're delivering what I said we would do. We're protecting the character of local communities. We're cracking down on land banking and irresponsible developers. And we're giving people a greater say in their decisions. Just this week, Mr. Speaker, just this week, on Monday, the Honourable Gentleman said the government should be giving people more power and control. Now he seems to be opposing that policy. It's only Wednesday. I know he flip-flops, but even for him it's pretty quick.
Mr. Speaker, he's forgotten. Last week, I offered him Labour votes to pass these housing targets because this is bigger than politics. The former Housing Secretary, on their side, said scrapping mandatory targets would, this is his words from their side of the House, be a colossal failure of political leadership. No wonder he doesn't want to fight the next election, Mr. Speaker. The author of the manifesto that they all stood on said it would cut building by 40%, perhaps even more. Why would he rather cripple house building than work with us to get those targets through?
Mr. Speaker, we're not going to work with the Labour Party on housing. You know why? We'll have a look at their record on housing. In London, the former Conservative mayor in 5 years built 60,000 affordable homes. The current Labour mayor, half of that amount. In Wales, we want to build 12,000 homes. What are Labour delivering? Half of that, Mr. Speaker. The Labour Party talks, the Conservatives deliver.
Mr. Speaker, as ever, too weak to stand up to his own side on behalf of the country. Mr. Speaker, I noticed there was another U-turn last night, this time on wind farms. I agree with that one, but is there no issue on which he won't give in to his backbenchers? Now, Mr. Speaker, how did his colleague, Baroness Moan, end up with nearly £30 million of taxpayers' money in her bank account?
Mr. Speaker, let me say, like everyone else, I was absolutely shocked to read about the allegation. It's absolutely right. It's absolutely right that she is no longer attending the House of Lords and therefore no longer has the Conservative whip. The one thing we know about the Honourable Gentleman, he is a lawyer. He should know there's a process in place. It's right that that process concludes. I hope that it's resolved promptly. But I say one thing, Mr. Speaker, because I tell him what is weak. Is not being able to. I'll tell him. And that's not being able to stand up to people. Just, I know he's taken some advice from Gordon Brown lately. Why doesn't he listen to a former minister in Gordon Brown's government who just said, why does the Labour Party refuse to stand up for workers in businesses like pubs and restaurants who will lose business as a result of the train strikes? Labour should stand up for working people. If he's strong, that's what he should do.
Mr. Speaker, it may not seem like it, but he's supposed to be the Prime Minister. This morning, his Transport Secretary said that his flagship legislation on strikes, this is what he said this morning, his Transport Secretary, might want to listen to this, is clearly not going to help with the industrial action we're facing. He should stop grandstanding, stop sitting on his hands, get round the table and resolve these issues. And everyone can see what's happening here. A Tory politician got their hands on hundreds of millions in taxpayers' money and then provided Duff PPE, and he says he's shocked. He was the Chancellor. He signed the cheques. How much is he going to get back?
Mr. Speaker, it's right that he brought up legislation with regard to strikes, and I'm very happy to address it, actually. So hard-working families right now in this country are facing challenges. The government has been reasonable. It's accepted the recommendations of an independent pay body, giving pay rises in many cases higher than the private sector. But if the union leaders to continue to be unreasonable, then it is my duty to take action to protect the lives and livelihoods of the British public. And that's why, Mr. Speaker, since I became Prime Minister, I have been working for new, tough laws to protect people from this disruption. That's the legislation he's asking about. Will he now confirm that he'll stand up for working people and that he and his party will back that legislation?
Mr. Speaker, he's obviously not heard what his Transport Secretary said about that legislation this morning. And it's obvious why they're so opposed to Labour's plans to clean up Westminster. They all voted for tax rises for working people while one of their unelected peers pocketed millions flogging dodgy PPE. You
should be ashamed.
Now, Mr. Speaker, I want to raise something that is worrying parents across the country. Our hearts go out to the families of the children who've tragically died from the outbreak of Strep A in recent weeks. I'm very happy to work with the government on this. So can he take the opportunity to update the country on the measures the country is taking to keep children safe this winter?
Well, Mr. Speaker, my thoughts are, of course, with the families of the children who have sadly lost their lives. We are seeing a higher number of cases from Strep A this year compared to usual. What I can say is that the NHS, who I have sat down to talk about this, are working very hard to make sure parents are aware of the symptoms that they should be looking out to, because this can be treated appropriately with antibiotics. There are no current shortages of drugs available to treat this, and there are well-established procedures in place to ensure that that remains the case. And the UK SHA are monitoring the situation at pace, and what they have confirmed is that this is not a new strain of Strep A, so people should be reassured about that. There is no reason to believe that it has become more lethal or more resistant to antibiotics, so the most important thing for parents to do is look out for the symptoms and get the treatment that is available for them.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Airbnb-type short-term lets provide a positive experience for many holidaymakers, but too many cause real issues for local communities. In Westminster, we have 13,000 Airbnb properties alone. Does my right honourable friend, the Prime Minister, agree with me that it is now time to consider a registration scheme managed by local authorities so councils can properly manage this growing sector?
My right honourable friend, the Levelling Up Secretary, has indeed said that we will deliver a new tourist accommodation registration scheme, something I know my honourable friend has asked for. It will increase appropriate regulation of the sector, better understand and monitor the impact on local communities, and we will also consult on whether planning permissions should be required for new short-term holiday lets, especially in tourist hotspots.
Can I welcome the new leader of the SNP and thank you in Blackford previously? Stephen?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to begin by paying tribute to my friend and colleague, the Right Honourable Member for Ross Skye and Lochaber, who has served us with diligence and duty for the last 5 years. Mr. Speaker, he is a giant of the Scottish independence movement. Mr. Speaker, he's seen off not one, not two, but three consecutive Tory Prime Ministers. Indeed, he was on to his fourth in recent weeks. And to that latest Prime Minister, I have a very simple question. What does he consider to be the greatest achievement of the Conservative Party in government since 2019? Leaving the single market and customs union, ending freedom of movement, denying Scotland her democracy, or getting the Labour Party to agree with all of the above?
Mr. Speaker, can I start by offering my genuine and warm, heartfelt best wishes to the Right Honourable Member for Ross Skye and Lochaber? I know the whole House will miss his weekly contributions. And may I also congratulate or join the First Minister in congratulating the Honourable Gentleman on his appointment as a Westminster leader of the SNP. I look forward to a constructive debate with him across the dispatch box. And, Mr. Speaker, the answer to this question is actually very simple. The things that we are most proud of in the last couple of years is making sure that we protected this country through the pandemic with furlough and with the fastest vaccine rollout.
Mr. Speaker, far be it for me to offer advice to a near billionaire, but he's going to have to up his game. And here's why, because in the last 15 minutes, a poll has landed which shows that support for Scottish independence has now hit 56%. And support for the Scottish National Party sits north of 50%. So in that context, can I ask the Prime Minister, does he consider that increasing energy bills on households in energy-rich Scotland by a further £500 will cause those poll numbers to rise or to fall?
Well, Mr. Speaker, what we're delivering for households across the United Kingdom, including those in Scotland, is £55 billion of support with energy bills. It will save a typical homeowner about £900 under their bills this winter, with extra support for the most vulnerable. And that is, Mr. Speaker, an example of the United Kingdom and the Union delivering for people in Scotland.
David Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Eden Project North is now...
Let's come out of Prime Minister's question. Yeah, that was the new Westminster leader for the SNP, Stephen Flynn, asking two questions of the Prime Minister. Rather good question, I thought, the first one, managing to skewer both the Tories and the Labour Party. And then a second question, which managed to raise the crucial issue of energy bills, at least as important in Scotland as they are elsewhere in the UK. Also mentioning good poll ratings for the SNP and a recent poll suggesting that independence is particularly popular with the Scots at the moment. So, yeah, get a lot of stuff in for those two questions. The first questions for Stephen Flynn as the new party leader.
Yeah, and a dig at Rishi Sunak's personal fortune as well. So, you know, no time wasted in his early questions. Of course, the tributes being paid to Ian Blackford as well. He was smiling there on the back benches as he was hearing his colleagues talk about his performance, his weekly contributions, as the Prime Minister put it, always very colourful. Well, we had the Blancmange Prime Minister.
That was a new one.
Said that he wobbles every time that, referring to his wobbles and U-turns. We had reference to the change on housing target, the change on onshore wind, the change, of course, also in terms of those housing targets being the detail about it. Interesting to hear Rishi Sunak say that, you know, only a couple of days ago, Keir Starmer was advocating for local government to have more power. So he's characterising that as a flip-flop. That was his riposte to that as well. We did hear the scandal around Baroness Moan also mentioned there as well, and the Strep A questions as well after those recent deaths. Interesting to hear the Prime Minister say that's not a new strain and there's no reason that it's become more lethal either. So plenty of topics covered in that conversation. Anything that particularly jumped out to you?
Yeah, perhaps not surprising that both the U-turns were covered. I see Sunak's defence of the housing policy, which is obviously planned, saying that the government is protecting the Greenbelt, investing in brownfield sites and supporting community plans. Quite easy for the opposition leader to pick from these topics. Plenty of stuff to go on. Interestingly, with the U-turns, though, of course, Labour pretty keen on the wind U-turn, but against the housing one. So policy-wise, a bit more tricky for Labour. I thought they're both on pretty good form. I think Prime Minister's questions between Sunak and Starmer is shaping up to be quite interesting. I feel like they both do a lot of preparation. It does feel to me slightly like some of it is quite scripted, perhaps is not surprising, but with Boris Johnson you get the feeling that he just kind of rambled in and just sort of said what he fancied, and sometimes it was very amusing and sometimes not so illuminating. But you do feel that both of these men take it quite seriously. You expect that from Starmer, being a barrister. Mm. But he's read his brief, he's got his lines prepared. Sometimes the jokes fall a bit flat, sometimes they're a bit juicier. And Sunak as well seems to be very well prepared. He's got his notes ready, he's got his lines prepared. So it does feel that that both are taking it seriously and investing a bit of time ahead of Prime Minister's questions every Wednesday.
Yeah, I did notice that Stephen Flynn, his first performance, had no notes. In fact, he had one hand in his pocket as he was speaking to the Prime Minister. So there's obviously he had plenty of time to rehearse his lines before he went into it as well. So he was well prepared too. OK, so that is what we've been listening in to Prime Minister's questions. Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak and Stephen Flynn from the SNP as well.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Let's get more detail, though, on one of the stories that did come up there. One of these political U-turns, the plan to overturn a ban on onshore wind farms in the UK. A defeat for the Prime Minister, buckling to pressure from his own backbench MPs, but potentially a major change in the UK renewables sector. Bloomberg's renewable energy reporter Will Mathis is with us in studio to talk more about this. I'm interested, Will, you've been working on the story, of course, for a very long time. What have we learned about how this plan could be changed?
Yeah, so this is a policy that dates back to when David Cameron was prime minister. It was a promise in the 2014 Conservative Party manifesto to basically block onshore wind in England because they thought that local communities and Conservative Party members, I guess, didn't like to look at wind turbines. And since then, you know, price of wind power has come down tremendously, and the price of electricity in general has gone up a huge amount. So the sense from industry is that popular perception of onshore wind in England has changed a lot. There are people who want it. I'm sure there's still some who don't want to see it, but a lot of people just want anything that will help bring down their bills. And in general, the climate targets are also quite popular, you know, Labour and Conservative, and it's going to be almost impossible to reach the UK's targets without scaling up onshore wind.
I think probably in a winter when energy has become so expensive, that's really going to be front of mind for so many voters. Quite interesting that changing this ban is going to be quite easy, isn't it? It's not as complicated as you might think.
It's really not. The ban is essentially one sentence in the UK's planning policy. There is a footnote on page 64 of the planning framework, footnote 54, and basically that says that while low-carbon electricity should be welcomed in general, as long as certain criteria are met, that doesn't apply to onshore wind, and it says that onshore wind essentially shouldn't be approved by local authorities, and as a result, it hasn't. And there's been, you know, tons of projects since this policy came into place that have been abandoned, that if they were, you know, had been built, they would be enough to power, you know, over a million homes for a year. So it's really had quite a significant effect that the UK is paying for now. And there is a lot of demand for new development if this were to be lifted. You know, if they were really just to rewrite that one, remove or rewrite that one sentence, there would be a lot of demand to build new turbines.
Well, how fast could the rules change? Is it just a matter of removing the sentence and then they can go ahead, or what happens next?
I think if they wanted to, they could, but what they have said they're going to do is consult on this. So around Christmas, they're going to launch a consultation, which is basically just a public call for opinions on a change. And so they're going to say what they're thinking about doing, and they'll ask for opinions on it. And then come April, that will close, and they'll try to move pretty quickly. And then they will be able to change those rules pretty easily. It's definitely has the support of a majority of Parliament. You know, Keir Starmer in PMQs was just saying, like, you know, this U-turn on Sherwind is one that I support, which he, you know, doesn't see eye to eye with a lot of Conservative Party policies, but this is something that they've been really hammering on about. And so this would have widespread support in the UK, and they could change it pretty quickly. And when they do, the thing about onshore wind that a lot of people like is that not only is it cheap, but it's also quite quick to build. So you could build a very small wind farm in as little as a year. So, you know, 6 months to planning and then another 6 months to construct it. So this could have a difference for power generation pretty rapidly once they move.
Yeah, I thought that was a really fascinating line because, you know, building anything with the planning system in this country takes absolutely ages. You know, sticking up a housing estate can take years and years, never mind a nuclear power plant, which seems to be measured in decades rather than years. But yeah, I'm fascinated to read that you could build a wind farm or at least a couple of turbines in as a year. So potentially this could all be some new turbines could be coming on stream in like April, May 2023.
No, 2024.
Sorry, yeah, which is really not that far off.
Yeah, it's pretty soon.
Fascinating stuff. Oh, well, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. That's Will Mathis,
our energy reporter here at Bloomberg. A couple of other things that we are watching out for later. There will be a decision on whether or not to go ahead with a new coal mine in Cumbria. That's expected to happen later on today. Many Conservative MPs in favour of the mine, which could produce coking coal for steel production. It's not for generating electricity, though. Climate activists surprisingly not keen about this, Ewan.
Yeah, this is a fairly tricky debate, and this has been rumbling on in the Conservative Party for some time now. Lots of Tories are keen on exploiting the UK's energy resources more fracking and more coal mining in certain cases. But obviously, climate activists are very against this, and they say that we should not be producing any more coal for any use whatsoever. But this is not for generating electricity. This is coking coal for steel production, which is imported anyway. So the argument goes that we may as well produce it here rather than importing it. But this is very controversial, and we're going to get the decision later on today.
Okay, well, that is it from us for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to subscribe and give it 5 stars so other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you usually listen.
Well, this episode was produced by James Walcock, and Marufa Hussain and John Wasserman were on sound. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. We'll be back with more tomorrow. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.